Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Blood River Radio, precious family out there, the precious family that keeps us on the air. Lord knows, you know, we have some wonderful audience. You know, we may not have the biggest audience in the world, but the one we do, they're really hardcore people. I'm so delighted to have my older sister, my big sister, Nancy Hitt, coming on tonight. She is a big time writer. I wish I had my paper here, but I'm going from memory. She did a book review. She's very, I'll tell you what, she is very intellectual. She can write. I was really surprised and delighted how well she can write. She does book reviews. She's going to do her book review tonight on They Were White and They Were Slaves. And our precious, precious baby sister, Monica, she was lost, but she has been found. But she's coming back tonight. She read the book. I have not. So the show, the second, I got my piece set, the first of the hour, it's going to be, Monica is going to ask the questions. Miss Nancy is going to present the book review. So take it away, big sister. Tell us what we're going to do.
Okay, I wrote a book review this year. Haven't been doing much writing, but the book review was called, well, the title of the book is They Were White and They Were Slaves by Michael A. Hoffman II. Apparently, Mr. Hoffman has written quite a few books. I went on to the internet and found that he's not too well liked by the Jews. It probably doesn't have anything to do with this book. He's written quite a few other books about the Jews. But this is what he said from the introduction to the book. This is a history of white people that has never been told in any coherent form, largely because most modern historians have, for reasons of politics or psychology, refused to recognize white slaves in early America as just that. Today, not a tear is shed for the suffering of millions of our own enslaved forefathers. 200 years of white slavery in America have been almost completely obliterated from the collective memory of the American people. One of the reasons that I was also quite interested in this topic is that my German ancestors were indentured servants. From 1714, I'm descended from Peter Hitt. And from 1717, Nicholas Yeager, both of them were indentured to the governor of Virginia, Governor Spotswood. It certainly wasn't white privilege at that time. They were actually cannon fodder between the British settlement and the Indians. At that time, the Blue Ridge had really not been investigated. Spotswood did take a group of men up to the Blue Ridge. This was in, of course, in Virginia. My ancestors worked for 7 or 8 years in iron mines in Virginia. That's white privilege without Social Security or welfare, which also happened somewhat to my grandfather, who had to start working at the age of 13. But at any rate, this is another thing that he actually Michael Hoffman goes back and investigates some of the reasons for these white slaves. And he's in his book, it covers historical reasons for the vast increase in the number of British poor, the indifferent and often brutal treatment of white children who were used as chimney sweeps, coal miners, the hardships they endured and deaths in workhouses, along with the kidnapping and exporting of British white orphans and prisoners to their colonial outpost. He exposes the abuses of indentured servants like my ancestors and our colonial history involving whites who were held in bondage, and America's later employment of young children in factory work. When he talks about indentured servants, he says that basically, this was a quote from another historian, Oscar Handlin, wrote that in colonial America, white servants could be bartered for a profit, sold to the highest bidder for the unpaid debts of their masters, and otherwise transferred like movable goods or chattels. I think the interesting part, which probably most Americans and most white people would not realize, is that Negroes actually in Virginia and even Indians had access to owning white slaves. And due to this, in Virginia, they passed a law in 1670 in the Virginia Assembly that said that neither baptized or freed Negro or Indian could purchase Christians, in other words, white citizens. And my point actually is that if the blacks cry for reparations and they do gain reparations in this country, which is totally illogical, then I want my part too of reparations for my indentured ancestors. So anyway, that's some of the book review.
Go ahead, Ms. Martha.
Nancy, that is just incredible. When I read this book, I had no idea what I was in for. This is not something we learn in school. I had never heard of white slaves, and that book was a real eye-opener, and I would just like to say that this book is so well documented. The footnotes were extensive. Michael Hoffman really dug into the archives. One thing I noticed that, and you mentioned it, this indentured servants word that got used. And now the treatment of these slaves, something that you haven't mentioned yet, but we can get into this, is how these slaves were treated and why it was so easy to be quite, shall we say, careless with their treatment, why they were so badly treated, and compare that with actually general treatment of black slaves. Would you like to comment about that and why the difference?
Well, certainly later on in the history of black slavery in America, black slaves were very expensive to purchase, so they were not going to kill them or brutalize them in general, because they were really quite expensive. It's amazing that some of the black slaves, the prices were, you know, $1,000 or more, but
yes.
That seems a lot in the 1860s or 1850s.
Oh, yes. When you pay dearly for something, you're going to take care of it, just like if you bought a very expensive car, you're going to protect that and guard it and not let a scratch come on it. The same thing with these slaves. And that was exactly where I was heading with that these black slaves were very expensive. Now, why was it that these white children who were being picked off of the streets of London and I believe Dublin as well, and they, you mentioned, they were very, very poor. Now, I think they were orphans, were they not? And there was no accountability.
Well,
they were cheap.
Yeah, I think I guess they would, somehow they would get them in these workhouses in England. And then they would take them from the workhouses and send them to their colonies, is the way I understand it. And, of course, it says here that regarding British labor, child labor, the Industrial Revolution's factory labor force consisted primarily of white children from the workhouses, who were seized and placed in the factories under a spurious indenture apprentice system. Now, my ancestors, I don't think they were physically abused as in the way that we're discussing today. They actually decided to come to this country. They willingly came to this country. And due to circumstances in which at least the first ones in 1714, they could not get out of London. There was a delay in the shipping, so they were obligated to the governor of Virginia to pay the passage to Virginia, and that is how they became indentured. I think actually they possibly had the finances to get to Virginia. I don't even know if they were intending to get to Virginia. They may have been intending to get to Maryland or some other state, but that's where they ended up. And the governor indentured them for 7 or 8 years. Now, they certainly didn't have it easy because they were isolated away from the British settlements in a five-sided wooden log fort. And it was, first of all, they had to figure out how to raise crops. And then they were also forced to work in the iron mines that Governor Spotswood was trying to develop in, around Culpeper, around the Rapidan River. So their situation might have been a little bit different. I know that some of them, maybe my ancestor Peter Hitt, some of them had to sue to be released from this indenture. But I can't visualize that these people were brutalized in the way that other people were in this, where they were kidnapped off the streets of England or Ireland, and just young children sent to this country.
That seems a little different. Small boys.
Well, Miss Nancy, my older sister, we have to go to a dear big sister. We have to go to our first break of the second hour. We'll be right back with this riveting story. Hold on, people. We're going right back to Miss Nancy Hitt and Miss Monica Schaefer as soon as this break is over with.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Oh, God bless you, Blood River Radio family, for hanging in. We're going to go right back to my sister Nancy Hitt and my sister Monica Schaefer. Sister Hitt told me to go ahead and mention this in the book, on page 46 of the book, that they were white and they were slaves. It says, and I was shocked to read this, from 1609 until the early 1800s, between one half and two thirds of all white colonists who came to the New World came as slaves. And get this, people, this is really, really an eye opener. Of the passengers on the Mayflower, 12 were slave, white slaves. Go ahead, Sister Nancy.
Well, see, these facts are something, again, like Monica said, who's ever heard of this? Just almost unheard of. It's certainly something they don't want us to know too much about or even explain, because it's too hard for them to accept these facts. It's difficult for them to swallow these facts.
So, I think that's because it has something to do with a certain agenda. I mean, this is very deliberate, isn't it? To basically, it's part of the agenda to always demonize white people, and the others are always the victims of our aggressions and our, you know, evil things that we've done. This is what we learn in school. I'm telling you, I've looked at the high school curriculum, social studies curriculum, in recent current times, and here in Canada, in British Columbia, Canada, and I said, wow, if all these white children don't commit suicide by the end of the year, I'd be, you know, it's a wonder. It's quite a miracle that they are, you know, just, you know, happy little children, when the things they're learning is nothing but guilt and never one stitch of pride in their ancestors or in their culture or their traditions. No, it's all guilt. So this white slavery is just not going to fit into that at all, is it? And so we know where
that's
this
true.
Agenda
that's,
is
that's
leading.
Absolutely correct. It's not part of their narrative. It's absolutely something they don't want anybody to really learn too much about. I was going to read a little something that was from page 46 about the situation of the poor people in America. And it says that psychologically and materially, whites in modern times are called upon to bear burdens of guilt, here we go again, and monetary reparations for Negro slavery. This position is based entirely on enforced ignorance and the deliberate suppression of the record of white slavery in North America. Just what we were saying, hundreds of thousands of whites have been enslaved during the colonial era in America, while millions of others were too poor to afford even a mule, much less a black slave. So this is something that is, it's taboo information.
Absolutely. It's very suppressed. And people who try to talk about this, they get shut down really quickly. Now, one thing about these indentured servants, these so-called indentured servants, you mentioned the figure of 7 years. I do remember that from the book, that this was a common, you know, time span that somebody would be an indentured servant for 7 years. But there are countless stories of these indentured servants, i.e. also known as slaves, who at the end of the 7 years, they couldn't get out of it, and they had another 7 years thrown onto them, and another 7 years. Some of these white slaves never were able to escape their own slavery until their deaths. Is that your reading of it,
Nancy? I think
that's
true. And I think that goes back to the fact that some of these indentured servants were probably, like I say, maybe in worse condition than... Now, my people came over in groups. In other words, Peter Hitt was with another several families. They were all together. Maybe that was a more of a protection for them. Even though they didn't speak English, that could have been more of a protection than, say, a lone orphan, say an orphan or a child that was put into an indentured servant to someone who sold them to someone else. Then they could have, you know, they could have been an indentured servants for the rest of their lives, or even if their lives lasted maybe long enough, maybe they would die, you know, as due to overwork. I would imagine that happened often.
Oh, yeah. And some of these children who were picked up, the skinnier the better. In other words, the younger the better, because a lot of them were being used. You mentioned this in the first quarter for chimney sweeps. They had to fit into
absolutely
the
horrible.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in England, I think they were still doing that back in the 60s. Well, I do remember seeing them still selling coal off the back of wagons, and young people working just covered black, you know, they were just solid black from the coal. So even in the 60s, when I was in England, things were not, you know, they were having a rough time in that period. So I can imagine 100 years before that, it must be terrible.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I know that another part of the lie is all about our ancestry, who, you know, who came to the North America first, and then when we arrived, you know, in maybe the late 1400s or something, that, you know, we were kind of the invaders. And it, you mentioned Virginia, that that's where your ancestors went to. Well, lately I've been doing some reading, and this is a little bit going on a side tangent, but we might just, you know, go on this little side tangent.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
right,
that
right,
where they
yeah.
found these spearheads that date back thousands of years before the Asiatic people came over to North America? And they ended up in Virginia because that's where they found the suitable rock for creating these arrowheads. Have you heard about that?
Possibly.
The Salutrians, that's something that,
you know,
I would encourage people to look into.
I've probably read that, but my, you know, I read the American Free Press and all the Barnes Review, and but my mind is probably not keeping all that information. Anyway, yeah, it's probably true. I was going to go back to these ancestors who survived this. Actually, the Jaegers and the Hits and these different groups. It says that my ancestor line comes from Hits and Jaegers, who came into Virginia in 1714-1717 as German indentured servants. In some cases, they had to sue to obtain their freedom. They worked, suffered, and thrived while beginning their struggles as mere cannon fodder between the British settlements and the unsettled Indian territory. My point is, this is again, aren't we getting sick of hearing about white privilege? This is white privilege. This is where my ancestors came from, and it certainly wasn't easy. But they made good lives. Ultimately, they succeeded in this very difficult, primitive kind of beginning.
Actually, this is a really, really important point, Nancy, what you're making, because in spite of the conditions that they lived in and the conditions that they came here in, they thrived. And how so? Through hard work, through creativity, through ingenuity. This is how they thrived, right? There was nobody handing them anything, nobody handing them reparations. In fact, everything was kind of going against them. And yet all the people nowadays who are asking for reparations because they've been badly treated and this and that, and of course all a lot of it based on lies, not everything, but you know, they mix lies and truth. But the point is, there's all these other people who are always playing the victim card. So white
Absolutely.
People, they never ever play the victim card, do they?
Right. Well, I will have to say this, that they did, there was a benefit to early immigrants. And I'm assuming they had some knowledge of this. I'm assuming they did. Because, see, head rights were something that, there was a lot of land, and head rights of like 50 acres were given when an indenture ship was completed. Now, of course, that didn't apply to orphans and children and people who were kidnapped off the streets. And I would say that many, like you say, some of these people who were indentured on these children, that they probably died working. But, you know, this was a little different situation. After they served 7 or 8 years or either had to sue to be freed, they did get some land to work. But, you know, again, it was, even if you got the land, it was primitive land. It was the trees hadn't been cut. And you had to, it was very difficult work, whatever they did.
Sister Nancy, we must go to a second break. We'll be right back and continue to discuss the story of the
Sunday break. People got to go to a quick break, excuse me.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
Police in Buffalo, New York are investigating a mass shooting that happened Saturday afternoon at a supermarket. Officials in a tweet wrote that several people were struck by gunfire at a Tops and that the shooter is in custody. Russian President Vladimir Putin is warning his counterpart in Finland that relations could be, quote, negatively affected if the country follows through with plans to apply for NATO membership. According to the Kremlin's press service, Putin told the Finnish president that Finland's abandonment of, quote, its traditional policy of military neutrality would be an error since there are no threats to Finland's security. In a statement, the Finnish head of state told Putin how his country's security environment had changed after Moscow invaded Ukraine, pointing to Russia's demands on Finland to refrain from seeking membership to the Western military alliance. Wall Street had a sixth straight losing week. This is USA Radio News.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshares. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, well, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, founder and CEO of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare. In the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. Sounds crazy, right? Well, the crazy thing is, this never ends. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. I guarantee if we can't cancel your timeshare, you'll pay nothing.
Were you lied to when buying a timeshare and want out? Get the facts about timeshare cancellation. Call Wesley now for your free information kit. 800-478-7733. 800-478-7733. 800-478-7733.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and a delegation of GOP senators are the latest American officials to pay a visit to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The visit comes as Ukrainian officials are negotiating with Russia to evacuate 60 medics and seriously wounded people from the besieged steel plant in Mariupol, the last sliver of resistance in the southern port city. According to a senior U.S. defense official, Ukrainian forces have gained ground in Kharkiv, pushing Russian troops north of the border. South Africa is experiencing a new surge of COVID cases driven by two subvariants of Omicron. They look like the original Omicron strain that was first identified late last year. The country has seen an increase in cases and a somewhat higher number of hospitalizations, but no increases in severe cases and death. A health expert says they don't want to call it a wave because it's early in the increase period. They add the actual number of new cases is probably much higher because the symptoms are mild and many who get sick are not getting tested. You're listening to USA Radio News.
God bless you, dear Blood River Radio family. We're going to go right back to two of my favorite people in the world. I swear there's nothing I wouldn't do for these two wonderful, precious ladies, Sister Nancy Hitt and Sister Monica Schaefer. We're having a great interview here. I'm just going to mention one thing about, we talked about Eric the Red during the break. His name was Eric Thorvaldsen from 950 AD to 1003 AD. There is evidence, they know he came to Greenland, and there's also evidence that he came to eastern shore of the United States, a.k.a. like New York or Virginia, and where they had white people even preceded him. Anyway, because they found iron implements there. Back to you, Miss Nancy.
Okay. Well, basically, I think what we were getting at is whites were treated very brutally. And one of the things that I really resent is they will tip the people who are promoting anti-white and how badly the slaves were, the black slaves were treated. They'll always, or often, they will use a photograph of a black man with his back that looks looks like it's got eruptions on the back of it, where theoretically what they're trying to imply is this man has been whipped so much that he's got all these terrible sores on his back. But if you look at, and if you study African history, if you even want to waste your time doing that, that was one of the things the Africans would do to themselves. They would burn their backs and have these big welts in different parts of their body. So I don't even think it's a legitimate picture of being of a black that was abused. I think this was an African tradition, and they've tried to blame the Southerners for causing this man's terrible situation on his back, and I think it's an African tradition. But at any rate, certainly these white slaves and young people and orphans and poor children that were picked up off the street and brought into this country, they certainly were abused. They were often abused by blacks. And whoever was supposedly trying to use them in whatever way they were used, it's just awful. Their lives mean nothing to the facts today. I mean, they're totally suppressed. This information is so few people have ever heard of this, and they don't want to believe it, really, and they don't want us to really know too much about it because it offsets, and it's just the opposite of what they want us, what they want the masses to fall for.
That's so true that this is something that most people have never heard of. And I can just tell you how I reacted the first time I even saw, it was at a meeting and I saw this book on display among other books. They were white and they were slaves. And I thought, whoa, what are they talking about? It just seemed like such a foreign concept to me. I couldn't believe it, actually. Anyway, I did something compelled me to pick up the book, and I read it. And like I said earlier, it is just incredibly well documented. There's no question that what Michael Hoffman researched to, you know, to put that book together, it's all absolutely true. And it also then, once you do, you know, start to accept these writings, that it does make sense. I mean, and then, you know, you talking about your own ancestors being these people. And of course, they had different language. They didn't necessarily call them slaves. They called them indentured servants. But, you know, the Hollywood version, and now what we learn in school, it really is always the same picture of, you know, the blacks being absolutely brutalized by the terrible white people. And I know we're talking about, you know, they were white and they were slaves, but we should talk a little bit about those black slaves. Quite often, the worst treatment the black slaves got was if there were, let's say there was a plantation with many slaves, then some of these black slaves would be the bosses of the other black slaves, and that's where brutal treatment happened, was black on black brutal treatment.
Right.
And then also we could talk about the blacks in Africa, and that they were actually enslaving each other, and they were selling, you know, it was black tribes selling members of other black tribes to a certain group of people that owned all these shipping boats. Now, who was that group of people? The Untouchables, the ones we're not allowed to name, lest we be called.
No, Unmentionables, I'm sorry, the Unmentionables.
Unmentionables, lest we be called anti-Semitic if we mention them. Isn't that the correct,
course.
You know?
Right. Well, you know, one of the things, too, I used to go ahead.
No, please.
Well, I was just going to say that I've read a lot of Confederate history, and one of the things, you know, if people would only read the actual diaries of what Southern people actually wrote, actual facts, the things that were going on in their lives, instead of this fairy tales about, you know, how they were just sitting around drinking mint juleps under magnolia trees or whatever. But at any rate, we know that there were blacks actually the fault for the South. I mean, the South was part of their what they were used to. And at any rate, there was a letter that was, or from a diary, a man had written that there were 400 slaves on his plantation. His wife was there alone, and he did not expect but one slave to leave. Now, explain that.
Wow.
How did and, you explain and, that? They couldn't have all been roped together. They were loose. They were farm laborers. They were field laborers.
Right. And not only that, Nancy, did any of them, like, was she afraid? Did any of them threaten her with rape? Or, like, was this part of it? Or, I mean, what, you know, I mean, what was going on
course,
with that?
Of course he would never have left his wife in a situation where he would have feared that. That would have been a tantamount to... You know, there's no way that he would have feared that these people would have raped his wife. So getting at is, how is that possible? If they were so brutalized and so terrified, they would allow the master to leave the grounds. Now, I'm sure there was someone in charge, but that he would leave and say only one during the war, only one would leave? Impossible. Of course, Lincoln tried to get the blacks to rise up, and that was the reason for the Emancipation Proclamation written during the war, was the servile insurrection that he was hoping for. But actually, there were no uprisings in the South. The uprising took place in New York City when they killed quite a few blacks because the whites did not want to fight. Basically, they did not want to fight. They didn't want to become soldiers, so they just decided to start killing blacks. That did not happen. There was no insurrection of blacks in the South. Now, I'm not saying there had been a terrible one before the war, but even though they were egging the blacks to rise up, they did not. So all of these things just don't make sense, do they?
That's right. And actually, my point earlier was to say that this plantation was just being run very smoothly, and that means that the blacks who were the slaves there, they would have been, I mean, they're the workers, they're living there, they're well fed, they're basically content, you could say, and that would be the reason why none of them ran away. But it would also mean that it was well organized, well run, not like nowadays cities, which are really dangerous places. And you, Eddie, you talked about in the first hour with Ran how some of these cities are just absolute war zones, and the, you know, the leftists can burn down the cities with impunity, and there's just so much violence and crime. Now, back in the day of slavery, when supposedly there's all this tyranny and whipping and torture going on, actually things were pretty well run. So that's the point, I think, that we need to make with this.
Right.
Go ahead,
and
Nancy.
One of the things that I just have a note here, it refers to something my little brother said, Eddie, little Eddie, when he was talking about the fact that being a pacifist or being peace-loving really is not going to get us too far. And Tacitus talked about the German tribes, and that was one of the things he said about the German tribes, that they were, those peace-loving tribes were overrun. Doesn't that say, that ought to remind us about the situation with allowing people to say that they're not going to take up arms, that we're not going to fight for our freedom, we're just going to be, we'll let them take over, we're just going to sit by and let whatever happens. But I have to agree with Eddie that something, you know, we have to stand up for our beliefs.
Well, dear Sister Nancy and dear Sister Monica, we have to go to our last break. Man, this hour is really flying. When we come back, I'm going to read y'all a quick paragraph or two from Thomas F. Dixon, Jr., 1905, and get your take on it. It fits right in with what you're talking about. Be right back, folks. And man, I'm really enjoying this interview.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com. Dying. Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death. Like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. freedomfactor.org.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you have to say something funny.
Well, Blood River Radio brothers and sisters, and we're going through our last segment. I told the girls, my dear precious sisters, that I'm going to read something briefly and throw it back to them. This plays right into what they were talking about. This was written by Thomas F. Dixon, Jr. in 1905. I believe he's the one that made Birth of a Nation, the greatest movie that's ever been made.
Mm-hmm.
Here it goes.
Yeah.
Since the dawn of history, the Negro has owned the continent of Africa. Rich beyond dream of the poet's fancy, crunching acres of diamonds beneath his bare feet. Yet, he never picked up one from the dust until a white man showed to him its glittering light. His land swarmed with powerful and docile animals, yet he never dreamed a harness, a cart, or sled. A hunter by necessity, he never made an axe, spear, or arrowhead worth preserving beyond the moment of its use. He lived as an ox, content to graze for an hour. In a land of stone and timber, he never sawed a foot of lumber, carved a block, or built a house save of broken sticks and mud. With league upon league of ocean strand and miles of inland seas, for 4,000 years he watched their surfers ripple under the wind, heard the thunder of their surf on his beach, the howl of the storm over his head, gazed on the dim blue horizon, calling him to worlds that lie beyond, and yet he never dreamed of a sail. He lived as his fathers lived. He stole his food, worked his wife, sold his children, ate his brothers, content to drink, sing, dance, and sport as an ape. And I would add, these are the people that came over here, according to some of the people who have told me, that these blacks, they built this country. They built Washington, D.C. They built the White. They built totally Washington, D.C. Back to you, Miss Monica and Miss Nancy. Go ahead.
Well, you know, in our politically correct world, listening to that, we're supposed to run for the hills and just run screaming from that because, oh, that's, you know, so racist. And that word racist, I just want to say that that's probably the most weaponized term. And why is that? Is it because we're not allowed to recognize that perhaps there are differences between the races? Just like in the animal world, we absolutely do not run away from recognizing that there are different kinds of birds. There are within the, you know, similar bird families, you've got the different, you know, you've got crows, ravens. Nobody would dream of saying, well, they should all get mixed up and become just like one bird in the future. You see, mm-hmm. There's such a double standard when it comes to people who are interested in protecting and preserving natural diversity. And that would be to make sure that all these different species of birds and butterflies that they maintain, that they are protected and preserved, and that we don't mix them all up together, and that would be very unnatural. But why is it that it is so taboo to recognize that among humans, among men and women, there actually are differences between the races? And when they say embrace diversity, does it not mean exactly the opposite? Does it not mean that we are going to erase diversity by miscegenating everybody? I'll just leave it at that and hand it over. Yeah.
Right. Well, I totally agree with what you're saying there. Totally agree with that. I was going to go back and say that this book, They Were White and They Were Slaves, appears to still be available on the internet. It seems like it's not yet censored. And it's a good, really, it's a good read from 1991. It has illustrations, a glossary, notes, and a bibliography by the Weiswell Ruffin House of New York. And it contains 137 pages. The author, Michael A. Hoffman, used many sources for his research into this little exposed subject of American white slavery in all of its many forms. And it's worth reading. It takes you on a different on a different trail down the history, the hidden history, I guess you would say. Yeah, hidden history.
I would say it's essential reading. I mean, if I had my way, if I was the new superintendent of all the schools, I would say this is part of the curriculum. And then there's, of course, there's lots of other books I would add to that, you know, make them mandatory reading for the schools and for the children in the schools instead of the you know, some of the garbage that the children are, like the Diary of Anne Frank, you know, like that's mandatory reading for all those children. Some of these things that are actually quite abusive of their minds because they're being led down, you know, to a suicidal path for the white people anyway, because we're guilty of everything bad and we never accomplished anything good. And, you know, that's how it is. But, you know, I just want to add one thing to what I just said about this word racist, and that it's a very weaponized word, and that we are not allowed to recognize that there are differences between the races. Now, that is not the same thing as love and hate, but they somehow tell us that if we recognize that there are differences among the races, between the races, that we automatically hate. How do you get that? How do they get that? No, nothing of the sort. Actually, we would like all the races to carry on living, but that means that we do not flood our countries with people from the other areas of the world, and that's happening right now. All the white countries are being flooded, absolutely flooded, and they're generally mostly young men who are flooding, for example, in Europe, you know. So this is all part of the agenda, the genocide of the white race. So, you know, Israel Cohen, I think it was 1913, he said, you know, we're going to raise the black people by promoting them in sports and film and whatnot. And then we're going to make them resent the whites, make the whites guilty of everything. So we're kind of bringing the blacks up, the whites down, and then they will start to intermarry, marry each other, and then that brings them into our program. And our program, that was the communist program, and we know who is behind communism. So there you go. That's in a nutshell what this is all about. And I think this book, to bring it back to this book, They Were White and They Were Slaves, yeah, it should be an essential reading. So I would encourage everybody to acquire it. Get the book.
I agree. Yeah.
Girls, I'd like to mention one thing. There's one case. There's always an exception to every rule. You can't point out some racial differences if you glorify the almost 100% NBA, the National Basketball Association. It's almost 100% black. people will, including a friend of mine, used to be a friend of mine, who is the assistant track coach at Arkansas State University, was telling me in detail the difference in the races of these endurance riders from Kenya. He said there's even differences in their bones, differences in their skin, that gives them kind of an advantage in distance running. And I said, well, oh, you think that's true, huh? I said, do you think, could that be genetic? Well, yeah, of course it's genetic. I said, well, you know, I noticed when I was at the University of Memphis, they had a science fair, and it goes back to like 600 years, and it shows all the greats, the all-time greats, Like Boyle, who came up with Boyle's Law in chemistry, et cetera. They were all white. There was not one black there. If you look at all the the great scientists in the world, they were all white. Could that be genetic? Oh no. Everything is genetic. Everything, hair color, skin color, bones, you name it, is genetic, except for the brain and intelligence. There's no way that could
That's
be.
That's right. Absolutely. That's right, Eddie. How could you possibly think that that's genetic? I mean, really, it is exactly right. Like that. Nobody does object to you when you do point out the fastest runners are generally black and that they might be better at certain sports and whatnot. Nobody objects. And you know, mm-hmm. I don't object either. Go ahead, talk about it. But there you go. Conversely, mm-hmm. we should be able to talk about some of the other differences and not be so afraid of that. But we're not allowed. We are simply not allowed. The mm-hmm. mainstream media mm-hmm. does not allow us, and Hollywood does not allow us. The public school system does not allow us. The universities certainly do not allow that, and it really is the opposite. I mean, it's always one agenda, and that is that whitey bad and everybody else good, and everybody else is the victim of bad whitey, and that's it. That's
Absolutely.
Part of the agenda. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, girls, before we run out of time, dear precious sisters, I'd like to make here's homework for our audience. Audience, if you would like to really do something grand, order at least one of these books, as many as you can, and listen, take it to your local school board. Take it to the school. Don't give it to them unless they promise to put it in the library. Take it to the principal of your various schools and confront them with this knowledge and ask them, will they teach some of this critical race theory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ask them about that. I would like to order some of those books myself. But back to you,
Well,
girls.
Let me pitch out something that I did years ago. I have no faith in libraries at all and certainly no faith in schools. But years ago, I donated a couple of books, I think, to the main library here in Louisville. And what they do, they have something called the Friends of the Library. Hmm. And the Friends of the Library help to sell books that they don't particularly want on the shelves. And books that are conservative, right-wing, uh-huh. or what they would call racist, are going to be either tossed out, or given to you for free, or sold for a nickel.
Or borrowed and never returned. I've heard that that's another strategy. They'll have their certain mm-hmm. people who will borrow them and just not return them, and they'll lose them. Right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they've got their cyanum, to take care of that, you know, and they'll get away with it. They won't have to pay library penalty fees. These are the cyanum, and I think we know who that is. Once again,
I'll right. tell these yeah. audience That's something it. Else, girls. They should, these churchgoers, my Southern Baptist and United Methodist friends, should get these books and take it and say, my donations to the plate that you pass around each Sunday is going to be, there's strings attached. This book will go in your library and it will stay there. If that's not the case, then no more donations for you people. But not,
great
I
idea.
Doubt we have one person in our audience has guts to do that.
That's
I know
great
some
idea.
That will.
Good ideas, Eddie. Good solutions. I like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Really
that
good.
That is a good idea. Mm-hmm.
I know we have some people in our audience that have the guts of a lion. I'm kind of thinking about these people I know outside of our audience that are United Methodists or so. Dear Miss Nancy and Precious Monica and Precious Nancy, thank y'all so much. It was a godsend having you on tonight. I will definitely keep in touch with both you precious people. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. Thank you for making the show that it was tonight. Thank you, Blood River Radio family. And dear Cameron, our little 20-year-old who just had a birthday not long ago. He's run this place flawlessly. Anyway, people, please think about donating. If you want us, Blood River Radio people, We got to go to Florida. If you want us to go to Washington, D.C. to see the sailors and do a broadcast up there, send us some donations. Not the same people that always donate. Maybe we get some of our new people who are kind of tightwads. Send some money in, if you will, people. Thanks again, everybody, and good night. And I'll be getting with our precious sisters very soon. Good night, everybody.